Hello and welcome to the Midweek Mash Tatty.
I'm looking for it.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Mash Tatty. This is episode 10. We have made it. we started out on a whim, thinking maybe we'll do a couple of episodes and see what it's like. And we're here, episode 10, many more to come. How are we today, boys? How's it going, Paul?
Started from the bottom, now we're here. And it's pretty much still the bottom. Slightly above the bottom now, we're still at the bottom. I don't know, man. I'm all right, mate. I'm fine. Had a good weekend. How are you doing, Harvey, mate?
I'm fantastic, man. Fantastic. Just, you know, plodding along. This week's been night shifts, so my days off have literally just been sleeping. So, yeah.
Morning. But
otherwise than that, it's been fantastic as usual.
Living a dream.
Living a dream. Aye. What about you, Michael? How are you?
All good, my man, all good. Been living it up in the glorious sunshine. Dying most of this week because I lived it up a wee bit too much in the sunshine because I'm Scottish and I'm not used to the sunshine. But happy to see it. All good. Right, so continuing with the theme of keeping it short and sweet and sticking with the news stories, we will go through the news this week again, and then we've got the mashup at the end. This week, the question is, does the rise of AEW mean the demise of WWE? So more on that at the end in the mashup. We're going to kick off the day with myself. Can I get in about the fight news?
Here comes Mick with MMA. Fighting a cage.
Alrighty. So, first thing the day is, since the Tokyo Olympics have kicked off, not going to spend a ton of time on, you know, like results for judo or taekwondo or whatever else, because it'll just take too long. If anything big happens, I will talk about it in the coming weeks. But anyway, what I did want to mention was that there's potentially some new fight sports coming to the Olympics in the coming years. I don't know if you've heard anything about this.
I haven't, fella.
So recently, I think just before the Tokyo Olympics, on the time leading up to the Tokyo Olympics, the Olympic Committee had their 138th International Olympic Committee session. So basically, I think it's in the lead up to every Olympics, maybe once in a tween to make, I don't know how they get done. Anyway, I don't know if it's every year or what. Anyway, they have these, essentially big meetings, and they talk about the sports that are going to be in the upcoming Olympics, and this is where they decide what sports are going to be in it, and the order of the sports in the next tournament, and they talk about where the tournaments are going to be, all that kind of jazz, all the organisation stuff. And on the table, among all the sports that were sort of in talks of being commissioned, were kickboxing and Muay Thai kickboxing. So, Sambo, forgot them as well. So they have now been officially recognised and given Olympic status. So that doesn't mean that any of them will ever be in the Olympics. There's no guarantees. But what it does mean is that the Olympics are officially recognising them. And now the committees that are responsible for these sports and their bid to get into the Olympics can now put together a framework for the way the competition would be structured if it was to be included in the Olympics. And then, you know, once they sort of finalise that, then it can kind of go to a vote, and potentially in the future we can see some of these sports come into the Olympics in the coming years, which is a big step for martial arts and combat sports. For the longest time, the only combat sport at the Olympics was boxing. And obviously they started introducing other kind of traditional martial arts, brought in Taekwondo and obviously Judo. And so it's really good to see other sports coming into it. As it stands, there's now, I mean, you can include wrestling. You know, you could argue that's a combat sport, certainly a big part of fight sports like MMA. So, but, you know, you'd have to say, wrestling's the sort of oldest Olympic combat sport in that regard. But it's no martial art. So, talking about two things that are the same, but they're different. So, just to confuse things. As it stands, there's currently five combat sports, technically speaking, at the Olympics. So you've got your boxing, your taekwondo, karate, which I think this is the first year that they're going to have karate at the Olympics.
Yeah, this is the first year because it's the birthplace of Japan.
Japan's the birthplace of karate, yes.
Yeah. So when the Olympic Games got announced, it was held in Japan.
They pushed it through.
Pushed it to get in. Get into the Olympic Games. That's generally how new sports get into the.
The host countries play a big part in. Absolutely.
But they still have to meet a certain criteria.
Yes. So it's not like a token event.
Basically, the biggest one is that the sport has to be it has two different sets for men and women, but the sport has to be practiced by at least 75 participated by men in at least 75 countries on 4 continents, and by women in no fewer than 40 countries on 3 continents.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, man. Hey, facts. Well,
science.
That was well fucking stuck in there, I've got to say. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah. Obviously, it has to have a certain appeal and stuff to get in, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of hoops that the sort of governing bodies for the sports have to jump through.
Mm-hmm.
Get recognition by the Olympics, and then to go for it's as big a step going for the recognition phase to actually getting the sport into the Olympics as it is just to be recognised in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need to essentially prove to the Olympics that they can hold a tournament, a competition at the Olympics for their sport that's like, you know, in meeting all the guidelines of like inclusion and safety and fairness, blah, 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 you know, like or everything that goes into it. Mm-hmm. So, just to finish that off quickly there. So there's boxing, taekwondo, karate, wrestling, and judo. So of them, obviously, taekwondo, karate, and judo are sort of very traditional martial arts. Your kickboxing, I've not got enough time to sort of break that down, you know, the history of kickboxing and stuff, but essentially with the kickboxing, it's an American offshoot of karate. So kickboxing as a sport was born from point karate fighting, in America, like sort of 80s or 70s or 80s. Although the techniques in kickboxing are many times are traditional and sort of come down through the years, yada yada, it's no traditional martial art, but it is sort of very, very good to see the combat sports evolving within the Olympics. Muay Thai, that is a martial art that is almost as old as the likes of sort of karate and taekwondo. That was originally a sort of militia fighting style, the people, I don't remember the indigenous name, but the people that lived in Thailand before it was Thailand, essentially. I can't remember the name of them now. I don't want to butcher it, but trying to hang it without knowing. But they needed a way of defending themselves, basically, against invasion. And so that's where their martial art, of Thai boxing, Muay Thai, was born, and over the years it's become the sort of national sport, and it's evolved to be a sport rather than a sort of military fighting style. So it's akin to something like Krav Maga in that sense, but It is, in many ways, a very sort of traditional martial art. And for me, I'm really excited to see that. But the problem there is that with it being the Olympics, it's going to be very amateurized rules. You know, you're not going to see elbows to the head. There's probably just not going to be elbow strikes at all. You know, one of the things with Olympics, they don't want to see people getting caught up in everything, even though it's a fight. So they're not going to have that. So, and then it's probably going to be like big gloves and shin guards. And then, you know, whether we get headgear and all the rest of it, and whether clinches are allowed and that, yada, yada. So I'm interested to see how traditional they can keep it, basically. Because when you start amateurising Muay Thai and watering it down, it just becomes kickboxing. So the fact that they're both in the table means that it could potentially be just the one of them that gets in. I don't know if they would both be in the Olympics the same thing. Anyway, just wanted to kind of shed a wee bit of light on that happening. The talk seems to be that the earliest we could possibly see either kickboxing Muay Thai or Sambo at the Olympics would be the 2028 Games, which are happening in Los Angeles. Being that they're in America, I'd say kickboxing's got the best chance of getting over. But whether we see any of them remains to be seen. So updates to follow as things kind of progress there. Right, moving on to the boxing. A few things happening here, so I'll just kind of run through the kind of latest. Now, I'm saying boxing, but it's, you know, it's a bit of a mix of sort of celebrity stuff and different things that are happening. It's no too strict on the term boxing there. The first thing, I previously mentioned Vitor Belfort in talks to fight Oscar De La Hoya. So the fight's now a done deal. It's going to be in the Staples Center, Los Angeles. It's going to take place on September the 11th. It was originally tabled to be an exhibition, but they've managed to get it sanctioned in Los Angeles. So it's going to be a light heavyweight 175-pound boxing match over eight rounds, sanctioned by the California State Athletic Commission. Interestingly, with the weight there, so it's £175, but it's with a £5 allowance. Now, I don't know if there's any boxing diehards that could correct me, or I could just ask Google. I don't know that there's normally a £5 allowance on a weight in boxing. I feel like it might be £2 or something like that. So they've got a hefty allowance to not quite make them. So basically, they're going to weigh in at £180. That's what's going to happen. They might as well have just made the fight for £108. It seems a bit daft to me.
Yeah, but
I feel that's probably at least in part on De La Hoya's side to make sure Belfort's not too big.
Aye.
I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
I've no idea what kind of weight De La Hoya will be these days, though, because he's not exactly been in fighting shape the last few years.
He definitely hasn't.
But anyway, aye. So, again, it's in September, so we'll talk more about it nearer the time. Just thought it was worth mentioning that it is indeed happening. Now, cracking on with the nuts boxing. Over the last few days, it's come to light that Rampage Jackson and Shannon the Cannon Briggs are in talks for a heavyweight boxing match, which is mental. So you've got Shannon the Cannon is a former heavyweight champion who has fought a who's who. He's fought a ton of guys over the last like 20 years. He's had a pretty mental career in boxing. And he's like early 50s now, I think. But I mean, still in immense shape. Like, he's still he finds it hard to get fights because he's an absolute danger. Like, he's no one easy fight for anybody. And if you get a win over him, then, you know, it's easy to sort of put the wind down and just sort of, you know, he's an old washed up so-and-so kind of thing, you know, like, it doesn't do a ton for your career to beat him, so he's found it very hard to get fights in the last few years. And Rampage, obviously insane career in MMA, he's been around for a long, long time. He's 43 or 44 now, hasn't fought in a couple of years in MMA after he got beat by Fedor Emelianenko in Bellator. He hasn't fought since then, so I mean, Rampage is a guy that last few years of his MMA career, he just didn't have it in him anymore. He didn't have the fire to train. He said that himself many times. It's the reason he moved to heavyweight, because he couldn't be arsed with the weight cutting anymore. He had enough in him to train hard for a fight, but the extra training that he needed to keep his body weight down, he just couldn't be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the wear and tear in his knees and stuff like that meant that like road work was, you know, he couldn't go on long runs and stuff as much as he used to and all the rest of it. So, more to come in that if the fight gets put together. They're definitely working on it hard. Let's see what happens with it. Only other thing to mention on it though, they've spoken about potentially doing an MMA fight after the boxing match.
Immediately after it, or months after it?
I would assume maybe 6 months later or something.
Yeah, great if you did it immediately after. I don't think it would be the same night. Shoes off.
Swap your gloves, take your shoes off.
Shoes off, go!
So apparently Shannon Briggs is open to doing an MMA fight with him. I can't see it, to be honest. I think that would be a shit show, quite frankly.
Money talks, mate.
It's a complete and utter rumour. So I'm not going to spend any time on it, but look out for more to come on that story as it develops. There might be something a bit more concrete on it next week. Right, next update. Spoke previously about the strongman fight, the heaviest boxing match of all time, Eddie Hall versus Hector Julius Bjornsson, or The Mountain, or Thor, or whatever else you want to call him. You're a big guy that does the heavy lifting.
Big Thor.
Big Thor, man. Aye, Big Thor. You're that big mountain there, man. You're a big mad mountain, mate. Bet you're on your fucking mountain, lucky you. I'm only saying that in a moving car going the opposite direction for him.
The fight is off.
The fight is off.
Eddie Hall has tore his left bicep in training.
Oh, shit.
He's had surgery already. I think he tore it yesterday or the day before. This is just breaking news the early this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, the day before he tore it, he's had surgery yesterday or last night. By all accounts, it was, you know, like a full tear, but I don't want to go into massive detail here, right? But when it comes to the bicep, obviously there's two heads to the muscle. Depending on where the tear happens and how the severity of the tear, it can mean a few different things. If you tear the top of the long head, it pretty much can be fixed. But if you tear on the bottom, on the short head of the bicep, then if you get a good surgeon, then even if it's a complete rupture, it can be fixed and you can come back very well fit. So Eddie Hall, when filming a TV show a couple of years ago, he was doing a bit with some wrestlers. I want to say it was Eddie Heats America or something like that was the TV show. I think it was on like Dave or one of these kind of channels. And so basically it was like an eating challenge show, and then in each episode, before the actual eating challenge at the end of the episode, he would do something in the town or the city or whatever that he was in. So in one of the episodes, he went and spent some time in a wrestling gym. They were teaching him some moves. So he was doing, I can't remember the bloody name of it. Do you know, like, you put a guy, fly a guy into the ropes, and as he's coming, you sort of do like an underhook in his arm, and you do like a hip throw or a hip toss.
Oh, it's a hip toss. So he's
taught
himself on a hip toss, really?
So he was learning to do it to take the bump.
So as the
guy's been tossing him over, his arm's going to get tied up in him, and it's just jerked it and popped his bicep. So he tore the long head in his right arm, and it was irreparable. So he's got a bit of a funky bicep on his right arm from that.
Right, so it's history there.
So he's got a bit of history with it. So in training and sparring, basically what's happened is he's threw a mad wide for the shooting for the hip left hook. His sparring partners took it on his arms, but just the way he's threw it, then the position he's been in when it's landed, all the strain's been on the bicep and it's just popped. With a guy like that who's been lifting weights for years and years and years and stupidly heavy weights, you know, it could have been something that's been over the years, it's been getting mm-hmm. worse. And this has been, but I don't know. But anyway, there is, if you want to go and look for it, there is video footage of the incident. I don't know if there's standalone footage, but you'll definitely get it on, what's the guy's name? Matt Rhodes Sport, I think it's called, YouTube channel. He's a guy that does a lot of content on, Strongman and, powerlifting, different stuff like that. He's got a video, out this morning, all on the situation with the fight, and, he's got a video clip of the sparring incident with the torn bicep. So anyway, so the fight's been postponed till next year. They're still going to go ahead with the fight. They've just moved to next year.
Oh, I was going to say.
Time to heal up for the surgery and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
The full fight card's still going ahead. And they're looking for a replacement opponent for Thor. So Thor's still going to fight on the card. The fight is going to, so basically there's going to be like a double header, right? So there's going to be, I want to say it's on the Saturday into the Sunday. I don't remember. I think it's the Saturday and the Sunday. So the Saturday, they're doing Woos, so World's Ultimate Strongman. They're doing a doubleheader strongman competition. They're having a strongman competition followed by a strongwoman competition. And then the following day in the exact same arena is the boxing. So I'll let you know who the replacement fighter is when it's officially announced. But there is rumours that they're talking to Marius Pudzianowski. So,
Jesus,
if you know the name, Marius Pudzianowski is a 5-times world's strongest man from Poland, who is in his 40s now. I don't know his exact age off the top of my head, but he's definitely in his 40s. He's a guy that did amateur boxing before strongman, and when he retired from strongman after winning his 5th world's strongest man title, he turned to MMA. So he's been fighting in MMA for the past, I'm going to say 11 or 12 years, something like that. He's got a winning record. He's done reasonably well. Most of his fights have been in KSW in Poland. He's not always fighting, you know, like the sort of best in the world at heavyweight or whatever else, but there's no denying the guy can fight. And he's got so much more experience than Thor. So as much as Thor's a bigger guy, Pudz is big enough and strong enough to compete with him and has the experience. So I think that would be a bad decision in Thor's part to take that fight if that is who they're looking at. But again, we'll come back to it when an official announcement has been made. Right, so moving, well, not quite on MMA, but we're almost there. Right, just very quickly run what to talk about the bare knuckle boxing, bare knuckle FC. It was on last night, a Friday night. So this was the return of Paige VanZant.
Yep.
So it was two former UFC fighters in the main event, Rachel Ostovich versus Paige VanZant, the Battle of the Boobs or whatever it was that it was dubbed by Paige. Rachel Ostovich won the fight, unanimous decision. Yep. Decent scrap. Not too much to say on it, but it's a thing that happened. But what I wanted to highlight was that I was very surprised to see this. BK, Bare Knuckle FC, have, for whatever reason, decided to get on the, what's the word I'm looking for here?
The bandwagon?
Bandwagon. I've got it written down as well.
The
bandwagon.
The party.
They've decided to join the bandwagon of celebrity boxing. So, in the middle of the card, they had three exhibition fights. They had some guy called Blueface, who I think is a rapper, versus Kane Trujillo.
Yeah, he's a rapper. Blueface is a rapper.
I'm not really down with the kids anymore, you see, so. I'd never heard of him. Yeah, apparently, Jay Porter, he's in Blueface. Aye. They had Nick Ireland versus DK Money. Got to assume my name like that, he's a rapper or something. And then Evil Hero versus Dakota Olave. I don't know any of them.
I mean, their names are cool.
I don't know what they're thinking putting these fights on. I really don't. So they've been 5 2-minute round boxing exhibitions. So they've had gloves on. There's been boxing exhibitions rather than bare knuckle. So not only are the celebrity fights, not only are the exhibitions, they're also no bare knuckle. So why the hell they're in the middle of a bare knuckle card, I do not know. It makes no sense. I don't like it. I'm fed up with a fucking sort of bit of nonsense on.
Give me attention, mate. That's the best way. We pretend it's not there.
But that's the whole thing. It's like, these people have a following. That's the reason they're there. The reason is to get the ratings up, to get more money.
Well, that's true.
Unfortunately, that's all it is.
I would suggest that whole card was a kind of come and watch us, because you've got the two beautiful girls doing sex changes out with one another, rappers fighting all over the place. It's going to get attention, obviously, because of that.
Oh, it's a sorry state of affairs. Anyway, last thing I'll say on it is that jump onto YouTube or whatever and just do a search for Blueface and BKFC or whatever.
Or look up Paige Van Zandt and Rachel Ostovich on Instagram and really enjoy yourselves.
Well, if you want to have a...
So I've heard.
after the match with Blueface and Kane Trujillo, a fan or somebody to do with Trujillo ran into the ring and tried to get Blueface clocked him one. He got him before the guy got him. And then a heel riot erupted in the ring.
It doesn't do it any good. If security
guards were in post. It was like, seen it at WWE, man, for 20 years ago. So, it doesn't do bare knuckle boxing any favours, I don't think.
No. I mean, well, it might, because, no offence, but America, like, Americans love to see stuff like that.
So it's trashy,
Like, they'll be.
Are you calling Americans trashy?
They love the hype with stuff like that. I don't know. I don't get it. But anyway, I mean, each to their own, like, you know what I mean? So, like, we're sitting here saying that it doesn't look good, but then next thing you know, like, the ratings have went up because of it. And all. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So MMA.
The noble sport. The more noble sport.
The real gentleman's fighting sport.
And I mean that genuinely, by the way. I'm not taking the piss there. It's better than fucking rappers punching one another. By a mile. Anyway, sorry.
Just before we get to the UFC, just wanted to quickly mention Bellator. So, I was indirectly ragging a wee bit in Matt Matchulin last week about what happened in his fight. So, with a tear in my eye, I bring the news to you. After that fight, Matt Matchulin was released to Bellator. So,
why was that, Harvey?
Because he's a fanny.
That was an off-camera joke, guys.
I was literally going to say because he's a spud.
Support the comment made by one Harvey Smith Jr.
A wee hidden joke for the boys there. Sorry. So the poor Matt's been introduced is what you were saying, mate.
Matt is gone. He's been released for Bellator, along with two other guys, Ronnie Marks and Adil Benjelani. Adil Benjelani, I know the name, but I don't know much about him. Ronnie Marks is an interesting character. He used to fight in the UFC and went off about the cliff, and he was let go by the UFC. He found his way to Bellator and he's not done very well. But he's moved from middleweight to heavyweight, so, I mean, figure that one out. So he's going to. So, Bellator's made some releases. I don't know if there's anything going on with trying to trim the fat there, if their roster's starting to get a wee bit big and, without having fans in attendance for some events and stuff, maybe the money's getting tight. I don't know. Keep my eye on it to see if there's anything that comes up, but, they've been letting some guys go. Right, UFC. Now, just a quick shout out or mention or tip of the hat or whatever to UFC and ESPN 26, Makhachev versus Moises. Happened last week, and I didn't mention it because we didn't have time really, because we were going on about McGregor and the whole nonsense that was happening there. Because we spent so much time on, what was that, 263, 264? I don't even remember what paper it was.
264,
it was. 264. So I decided to sort of omit UFC and ESPN 26. So just very quickly, if you've not seen it, I recommend watching a few fights over there. There was some good fights on it. Sort of picks of the night, Rodolfo Vieira, a guy I love to watch. If you're not into grappling, fair enough, you might want to skip it. But the guy's a legend in BJJ. and had a very entertaining fight with Dustin Stolfus, something like that, I don't know. he submitted him with a real naked choke, and if you've got any interest in submissions and grappling and MMA and martial arts in general, I would urge you to go and watch that fight, because the way he choked him out was like, it was like perfection, like poetry motion. It, like, his movement's so effortless when it comes to grappling. Just sort of, I don't even, like, he glided, like, he saw an opportunity, a split second opportunity, and just sort of glided onto the guy's back. And as soon as he was on his back, the guy, you could see the panic in him. Dustin was panicking. He was trying to defend.
He knew what was going to happen.
Aye. And Vieira just sort of slips the arm in, choke. And as soon as it was locked up, you could see it in the guy's eyes. It was done. There was no way he was getting with it. Aye. Phenomenal submission. Definitely worth checking. The guy's, he's got his general MMA, games much improving. So he's what he's wanting to watch. But, I mean, he's a wee bit older than years. He's not old, but, you know, I mean, he's a long career on Brown's before he MMA. Anyway, I'm waffling. Matthias Gamrot, Jeremy Stevens, interesting fight, entertaining fight, didn't last that long. That was another submission win there. The Kimura fe, Gamrot was very good as well. But it was an entertaining fight, whether you're a grappler or not, that one. The return of Misha Tate. I'm sure he's will be familiar with the name.
Kickboxing style, eh?
Sorry?
She kind of kickboxing style, or am I thinking of Holly Holm?
You're thinking of Holly Holm there. She's the kickboxer, right?
Right. My bad.
Misha Tate's more of a grappling, sort of dirty boxing grappling right. style.
Can I high up the card though originally at one time, aye?
Yeah, aye. Mm-hmm. So she came through, she was top of the world in MMA before Ronda Rousey. So she was, Misha Tate was the man among women. Mm-hmm. She was the big dog, in Strikeforce back in the day. Then Ronda Rousey came blistering through, beating everybody within a minute or two with arm bars, had a massive rivalry with Misha Tate, beat her to win the Strikeforce title, came into the UFC when the UFC bought off Strikeforce, that was when they first brought women's MMA into the UFC.
Right,
so they crowned Ronda Rousey, their inaugural women's champion.
Right, I didn't realise that's how that all came about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they basically gifted her the bantamweight, 135-pound.
So she was just kind of anointed as opposed to winning it.
She came in as the champion for Strikeforce.
I mean, it's fair.
So then they had a season of the Ultimate Fighter with Misha Tate and Ronda Rousey as the coaches, and they hated each other, man. Absolutely detested one another, and it made for very, very entertaining telly, I must say. So Misha Tate went on to challenge Ronda Rousey for a set. Well, obviously it was a rematch. Went on to challenge, lost the fight. You know, the rest is history and all the rest of it. But interesting that you mentioned Holly Holm, because Misha Tate did eventually beat Holly Holm after Holly Holm had beaten Ronda Rousey. So Misha Tate did become the UFC champion before losing it to Amanda Nunes and retired. So she came out of retirement, and she can still do it. She's still got it in her. Really, really good fight with Marion Renault. Actually, it was Marion Renault's last fight, so she retired after the fight. She made it public that she was going to. She's like in her 40s. I think she started MMA late. I think she'd done some kickboxing and all that. And then came into MMA quite late. So she's 40, early 40s. She's hung up her gloves. So it's quite a kind of fitting, affair. Misha Tate coming out of retirement. Try to have one last run at the title. After, I think she's got two kids now. So she's a mama bear. Fighting Marion Renault, who was deciding to retire. And then the main event, Islam Makhachev, dominating really Thiago Moses. That was an interesting fight. Makhachev's definitely one to keep an eye on. So, go and watch that. Right. Very quickly run through. Well, in fact, I'm not even because we're running out of time, so I'm not even going to run through the card. Have you seen anything for UFC on ESPN 27 for last night?
I went to bed early, so and then I forgot about it today. So, unfortunately, not. I will be watching it later though.
Highly recommend it. Paul?
It popped up on YouTube this morning. I watched it very hungover, and I saw that Dillashaw kind of took a bit of damage, but ultimately won in five rounds, am I right in saying, yeah?
Yes, that's right.
Seemed quite competitive, though.
Took the decision.
Very, very, very good, very entertaining fight. Dillashaw, a wee bit rusty. He's been out for 2 years. He was banned.
I didn't realise he'd been gone as long as that.
He was he was suspended for 2 years, BSADA, for doping. He got caught with EPO, nice system, which is a rare one for combat sports. EPO is synonymous in the world of cycling, Tour de France and all the rest of it.
Is this blood doping that you get onto
yes.
here? Right. Oh, tell us about this.
Right.
I see we've got a wee quote and a wee
shirt. I've got a bit of quote here. So, the one and only Chael P. Sonnen, Chael Sonnen, famous MMA fighter.
Chael, I can't let you get near me, Sonnen.
For his rivalry with Anderson Silva, very well known. He's a guy that he's probably a better pundit than he ever was a fighter.
He was in his day.
I mean, he's a really good wrestler. Anyway, let's not spend time on that. But he's a funny guy and he's a very good pundit. He, towards the end of his career, or towards the end of his tenure with the UFC anyway, he got busted. He got done for using a few different substances. So he knows a thing or two about performance enhancing drugs. So I'm just going to read a quick quote for him speaking on the return of TJ Dillashaw and use of EPO. So EPO, erythropoietin, I don't know, EPO. So it's, as you say, it's essentially a form of blood doping, right? So the quote from Chael Sonnen reads as follows. EPO, of all the performance enhancers, I will tell you, personal experience here, I'm an expert in performance enhancers for all the wrong reasons, but an expert nonetheless. EPO, without question, is my favourite. I've taken everything. I've gone into GNCs or health stores and tried everything on the shelf and on the off chance that something would work, and it doesn't. They're all junk. None of the stuff anywhere on those shelves works, but the same is true with performance enhancers. You're not going to get a bump on all of them. EPO is going to increase your red blood cells. What does that do? The red blood cells is what carries oxygen throughout the body. So the more red blood cells you have, the more oxygen you can get. It directly affects your cardiovascular output. It's not going to make you bigger, it's not going to make you leaner, it's not going to make you stronger, it's going to give you more endurance. A guy that takes EPO, particularly in training, can now just train longer. He can hit the bag that many times more, he can jump that rope many times more. So, as Chael Sonnen's alluding to, basically, it's a form of blood doping that basically allows your body to sort of supply itself with more oxygen and you can go for longer. TJ used it in the run up to his flyweight title fight with Henry Cejudo. So moving down a weight class. So he was adamant that he could make the weight and that he could be a double champ going down a weight class, which you never hear if somebody's going to be a double champ and go up in weight. But it transpired as TJ was training that he was struggling to shift the weight. So he decided to use EPO so that he could do more cardio and shed some more weight. But that's the reasoning that's been put forward. Aye, so ultimately, didn't he win the fight? That's a story for another day. But after the fight, USADA busted him for using the EPO. So he had a 2-year suspension. So he last fought in January 2019. And just yesterday, he's made his return. So he's a sort of controversial figure now because he's a guy that he's got the most wins at bantamweight. He's got the most stoppages, the most fight night bonuses. He's a legend already, within the sport MMA, within the UFC's bantamweight division. But now his legs is tainted because he's a cheater.
Got this mark on it, yep. And then people are questioning.
Yeah. Now, USADA do when somebody pops for something, what USADA do is they go back through every sample that's ever been taken of you and they test it with all the latest technologies, all the latest tests to see if there's anything they've missed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes samples are taken and never used because it takes backups or whatever else. So when this happens, they go through everything with a fine tooth comb and they've come back with nothing. So TJ's adamant that he'd never used any PEDs before that fight. and he only caved and used it because he didn't want to be embarrassed by saying that he couldn't make 125 wrong or whatever else. So, you know, he's had his name cleared to the degree but he's had it because they've not found anything else, but many people just don't care. You know, once a cheater, always a cheater sort of thing. So, yeah. It's a bit of a shame that, I mean, you can't feel for him too much because for his own admission, he cheated. You know, he made his own decision. He's got to live with the decision that he's made and the repercussions of that. But at the same time, he was on track to be one of the all-time greats. He was very high in the pound list. Phenomenal fighter. Very well-rounded fighter. Good everywhere. And just had a meteoric rise. And there was a whole backstory to that I can maybe get into in another day. Way sort of how he came to fighting for the title and everything else. So, definitely recommend the UFC for last night, if for nothing else, to check out the return of TJ Dillashaw. And, he's not in an easy fight. Cody Sandhagen, he's on the cusp of a title shot. I think he was like number two ranked in the world or something like that coming in this fight. The guy is very good. He's the guy that knocked out, forgot his name, Frankie Edgar. With a flying knee last year.
Yeah.
Or start of this year. Mm-hmm. Start of this year, I think it was. If you've not seen that clip, go and look it up. Amazing flying knee. Absolutely amazing. What a highlight that was. Anyway, so he's knocked a few guys. He's had some knockout wins recently. He's looked very, very good and was in the cusp of a title shot. So for Dillashaw to take him after 2 years out and take him the 5 rounds and look very good doing it, it's a big step, you know, it's a big welcome home. It's like a putting everybody in that division on notice that he's back. Yep. So I'll leave it there. There's a bunch of really entertaining fights in that card. So, actually, one I will mention, just as a wee nod to the wrestling that will make more sense later in the episode. Oh, Mickey, you're so fine, you blow my mind. Oh, Mickey Gall, was fighting on the card. He is the man that welcomed CM Punk to the UFC a few years back. So that will make more sense to you in a wee while. He beat, Jordan Williams by a rear naked choke and showed some much improved striking in that fight. Looked really, really good. I think he's taking a step up there, so I think he's going to start moving up the billing. But with that, I shall bid you adieu, and I do believe it's time to talk to Harvey, or for Harvey to talk to us, rather.
Here comes Harvey with the soccer! It's called Fat Boy, you dafty!
Yeah, so just going to talk a little bit about the football. I mean, mainly, honestly, it's going to be about Scottish football, just because there's not really much went on this week in the football world. So just a quick on football, and going to talk about the vroom vrooms and then the Olympics. Yeah. So it was good to see Hibs and Aberdeen making their debut in the Europa Conference League with very comfortable wins. So Aberdeen won 5-2.
Sorry, you've only just started and I'm cutting you off already. What am I like? Can you very briefly give us a synopsis as to what the Conference League is? Because I presume there will be a few out there who dabble in the old foosball but don't follow it fully and maybe haven't heard it.
Okay. So, yeah, the Europa Conference League was it's set up to help the clubs in smaller countries with a lesser coefficient to get them some European football and essentially more money for everybody involved. So UEFA obviously would be getting money and these smaller clubs would be getting money, which is supposed to be a good thing for football. The more money at the smaller clubs, you know, the more the better their training facilities get, youth players coming through, etc., etc., etc. So it's the third league down. So obviously you have the Champions League, Europa League, and then now you have the Europa Conference League. Yeah. But with that being said, you still get some pretty big teams in the conference league.
Yep.
So you can have, let's just take Wales and Ireland, for example, where, you know, it's kind of like semi-pro leagues.
It's pretty much semi-professional, yeah, mate.
They now have a team going into the conference league.
Yep.
And they could potentially play somebody like, Tottenham, for instance. I believe Tottenham are in the...
Tottenham are the one qualifier from England so far, aye.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, and they might have to play them in the qualifying stage, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not going to be somebody similar to them. So it's kind of like,
You can have, teams can filter down, couldn't they? The way you would, that team can crash out of the Champions League but land in the,
right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
thingy.
Into the
European.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
what's the name of it?
The Champions League, you're in the Champions League qualifier. You lose the Champions League qualifier, you drop down into the UEFA Europa League second qualifying round, I believe. And then if you lose from that round, it used to be that was you out of European football, but now you drop into the conference.
Yeah. See,
and then from there you
would have these smaller teams playing the games of their life, getting through the initial stages, and then suddenly they're faced with something could go tits up with Barca and they find their way down, or a Real, or a
very, very whoever, big clubs. But in certain like the terms, I could potentially.
It could lead to some banana, like crazy matchups.
Yep, pretty much. But I mean, for smaller clubs, it's amazing, right? Because you'll be playing against these big clubs, most likely be on TV, so that's more money.
Yep.
More fans will come to watch as well, you know. So
when they're allowed to, if they're allowed to,
if they're allowed to, so I'll name some of the bigger teams for you, right? That's in, so in the playoff round. So this isn't even the group stage yet, right? So these teams have got a bye into the playoff round to get into the group stage, and that would be Tottenham. So you have Tottenham Hotspur, Roma, Rennes from France, and Union Berlin from Germany. Germany. Then that you have likes of Anderlecht. They're in the third qualifying round. Another big team, you know. It is Feyenoord. They're in, in the second qualifying round. Yeah, big Dutch team, you know what I mean? So you have all these different clubs that they're big in their own right, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Big teams with great squads that have a tendency to get overshadowed by the bigger teams.
By the bigger teams. So yeah, it'd be good though. It'd be good. I think it's a good thing, to be honest. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think it's not. I mean, yeah, everybody's entitled to their opinion. You know what I mean? So that's what the conference league is. Yeah. So. It was good to see Aberdeen and Hibs getting wins. They were good wins in there. So, Aberdeen won 5-1 and Hibs won 3-0. So that was good. Hopefully, I mean, they play next week again. All two of those games were at home. They are now away. Hopefully they win them and get through to the next stage. I'm pretty sure they will. So that'd be good. And then I think St Johnston, when do they play?
I think they come into it next week or the week after against Galatasaray, because they're the one team that are in the Europa League for Scotland so far.
Yeah, they're in the Europa League,
yeah. Because the Scottish Cup winners.
And then you have Celtic and Rangers in the Champions League. So Rangers they don't know who they're playing yet until after
Celtic's round's done.
Yeah. So Celtic now, they're 1-1. They're drawing 1-1 with Midtjylland right now.
But with the away game, goals.
Yeah, there's no away goals anymore. So, but I mean, I'm pretty sure Celtic can get through to the next round. hopefully Celtic and Rangers can make it to the group stages. St. Johnston, Galatasaray are
very unlikely,
pretty good team. So I don't see them beating Galatasaray, but if they do, fantastic. I don't see them doing it. They'll probably drop down into the Conference League, which is fine. But then hopefully we could have the three Scottish teams in the Conference League at least go to the group stages. That'd be something. And so that builds up the coefficient, right? You know what I mean? And
it's just all, it all feeds into mm-hmm. the club squads, it feeds into the national team, and that's what we need, especially after the Euros there.
Exactly. So that's my thinking. Like, hopefully they progress well, win a couple of games. Hopefully Celtic Rangers get to group stage, maybe win one or two of those games. Being 100% like truthful to myself, I don't see Celtic. Well, it depends on the group they get, but I don't see Celtic Rangers progressing through to the next round of the Champions League, after the group stage. But finishing third and going into Europa League, that would be something as well, and maybe another win or so. But yeah, again, it's to build up the coefficient. More teams in Europe, the more teams you have in Europe, and not even just in Europe, like starting in better positions in Europe, like. Eventually get back to the old, you have to play one game before you're in the group stage for Celtic and Rangers, like, you know what I mean? It'd be great for Scottish football as a whole.
We're big on that podcast, on our podcast here for the whole of Scottish football, aren't we?
Yeah,
I can speak for us all.
Exactly.
I think we should very, very much be hoping to get to a place. I don't know enough about the coefficient and stuff, but I'd like to think that in the near future we could be in a place where at least the top team gets straight in. Maybe it's one team goes straight in, one team has to qualify. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. It's so possible. I mean, that would be amazing. Like, one team straight into the group stage, the next team has to play in the qualifying round before the group stage.
Yeah.
And then
with a favourable,
like two teams in a similar position with the Europa, a couple of teams in the
Exactly. That's where we want to
be. Big for the Scottish game.
And it's not just, it's more so for the smaller teams, because that means more money for them. Yep. You can get better players and stuff.
Exactly.
But not only that, it'll be better for the younger Scottish, lads playing football,
Experiencing tournament football, Harvey. That's what it comes down to.
So, good for the development and all that, which, we need. Celtic the other day we had. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, just I was going to say which has a potentially big knock on effect for the national team, because a lot of the time the national team are made up at least kind of in half by Scottish lads that are coming for teams lower in the league that don't normally get the European experience. You'll have a certain amount of coming for your Rangers or Celtic or some English teams or whatever. But now more teams, more players, more Scottish players hitting Europe and getting involved in big games, getting the big match experience. It can only help us.
Aye.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at Declan Gallagher, he playing for Motherwell before he got into the Scotland squad, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But now he's moved to Aberdeen.
In the Aberdeen squad that's done really well against the Swedish mob that they thumped. Aye.
Yeah. But, Aberdeen have signed is it Aberdeen? I think it's in January. They have him signed on a pre-contract. It's an American striker.
They just got one in. So they had Ramirez. Mm-hmm. He started against Ramirez. He was very good, apparently.
I'm not sure if it's him or not. But this young lad has like three or four caps for the American national team, and he's only like 21 or...
They've got a link through Atlanta United in America that allows them to get this kind of lot easier. So it seems to be benefiting them. If that first game's any go by, Aberdeen look like they could be this year. Like, Scott Brown's a big change to them as well, though. Mm. They're raising standards in a dressing room. Yeah. Him in the middle of the park with his voice, that boosts a team. Even with the lack of his legs now, he's easy as.
But his lack of legs, but he's a very smart player. A lot of people forget that Scott Brown's a smart player,
Aye.
They always just see him as this big brash guy. They're like, they see him as a hothead, but...
He's much more than that, aye.
Yeah. A lot of the time, he's the antagonist, like, you know?
He's very clever, aye.
Yeah.
Very cute with how he kind of winds up other players and that.
Yeah.
You couldn't be at the top level in Scotland all the years with Celtic, mate, and no have a bit of talent about you. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Aye.
But I was like talking about Celtic, you know, like it shows you how bad things are at Celtic right now. I know I'm being off straight away, but their Champions League game, so Nir Bitton, who's a midfielder but can play at centre back, he got sent off. Right,
a nightmare, mate.
Stupid, but so Ange Postic, Ange had Postic, to
the manager.
Sorry, mate. Ange,
come on, bad guys.
he took off Abada, who scored on his debut, by the way.
He did a very good
he had a very good game up until that point, like the 42nd minute, I think it was. That Bitten got sent off, right? So he came off, and then they brung on another centre back, Dane Murray, but he's 18 years old, and then the other centre back, Lever Welsh, is 20 years old. They don't have any defence.
That's just what I was going to say, you Harvey. See, when I saw that last week, that their back five was Barkas, Greg Taylor. Mm-hmm. Anthony bloody Ralston, who has been out in the wilderness, gets a start.
Yep.
Stevie Welsh, who again was another one who's come in because of the lack of depth. And Nir Beaton, who's a central midfielder. And the most worrying thing about that is that your most experienced guy there is the one that lets you down. That's worrying.
Exactly. Yeah.
That you'd expect him to set the standard and he loses his head.
Yeah, it was, you know, and everybody was like, why is Ayer not starting and this and that? And I was like, they were like, oh, he has an injury. I was like, he does not have an injury. He's getting sold. Like, that, you know, they just wanted it because, and it happened like, what, 2 days later?
Yeah, and obviously now sold. That's the thing. He's away Brentford.
Yeah, he got sold to Brentford.
Yeah.
Right?
Aye.
But that's why they never started and that's why he never played because of that. And if you listen to what Ange said before that game, he said, because somebody asked him about Aya, and he said, I'm not here to talk about it, about him. I'm focused on the people who are here and committed to this club. So from he said that, I was like, Aya is out the door. He's leaving. Because if you listen to what he said, he's like, I don't care. Like, I just want, people who are here and who are committed to being here.
Aye.
Like, oh, cool. But then now they've signed this big guy, Swedish guy, Starfelt. Like, he seems to be all right. But they need to get some for it.
Rangers like, are heavy favourites for the league.
Oh, yeah. Celtic need a goalkeeper. They need at least another two centre backs. Right? They need a right back. midfield, not so bad.
Okay,
Edward leaving, most likely leaving. So you need some cover for him. It's a start. Yeah, that's where you need to start, like, but I don't know. There's a few keepers out there that they should be pursuing, but I don't know what's going on. Who knows? Anyway.
But in a golden phase.
You remember last week, I think it was off air, wasn't it, right? That I was talking about, the rules that FIFA are trialing in the youth thing. The trials have started. So there's been a few tweaks there actually. Just so everybody knows, right? The rules that FIFA are trying to change or are thinking about changing are, cutting the time of the games from 4 to 5 minutes to half an hour each half, which is fine because they did studies, extensive study, and usually the ball is in play for half an hour of the half, right? Half an hour of the 4 to 5 minutes. So that's cool. But basically what it's going to be is, as soon as the ball goes out of play, the referee's watch stops. When the ball comes back in, he starts it again. Same as a foul or substitution. Anything that stops play, the watch is stopped, and then it restarts. And then when it hits 30 minutes, the game is stopped. Now, I'm not sure if it's going to be along the same lines as like rugby, where after the 30 minutes is up,
the ball
has to go dead,
mm-hmm.
or if the referee's just going to blow it. Because, you know, football is a little different from rugby.
Yeah.
I would say, like, if it was like a goal scoring opportunity, then maybe it doesn't stop. Like, you know what I mean? But if the ball's like in the air in the halfway line, like, stop mm-hmm. the game.
I would assume it will be much the same as what it is now. Because obviously, like, you know, like, you have 3 minutes of stoppage time. The 3 minutes are up, but it's a goal scoring opportunity. So the referee will let it go.
Then it
I would
go.
Think mm-hmm. it'll
the
be
the way keep the spirit of football. And I think.
Aye. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then the other one that I really like as well is a yellow card now means that you have to sit off for 5 minutes. Whichever player it is that gets a yellow card, they have to come off the park for 5 minutes. Then when the 5 minutes up, obviously come on. And if you get a second yellow card, it's the same again. Same as it is now. And it's off. Two yellows is a red. You're off. Yep.
Sin bin being introduced.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah, so the other one being rolling subs, so you can make as many subs as you want. Not really sure how I feel about that one. Could be a good thing, could be, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I love it when I'm playing football, because if I get knackered, I just come off for 5 minutes and then I can come back on, you know what I mean? But yeah, and the other one is when the ball goes out for, as we would say now, a throw-in, it would be a kicking, right? So, like, back in the school days, balls on the ground, you kick it in. I did see another tweak on that because I didn't read it. So, apparently, they're trialing that from a corner and kicking like that. You can actually just kick it to yourself and dribble.
Oh.
So, from a corner, you don't have to just, like, cross it in. You can, like, dribble away from this and then cross it in. So that, I don't know how that would work. Like, it's a bit strange to me, but anyway. We'll see how it all works. If they even get brung in. Because obviously if FIFA then, because they've tried it with these youngsters, if they say like, oh yeah, that they've worked really well, or whichever ones they think work really well, then it goes up to the, Paul, correct me, what is it, IFAB?
I believe it's the International Federation of it's IFAB.
I think that might be what it is, but and then they look it over and see what it is, and then they ultimately decide yes or no if it
mm-hmm.
Gets brought in as a new rule. But I mean, that's all I got in football right now. Nothing too exciting happened.
Probably the old F1 filler.
Yeah, so just, I was just about to go on to it, yeah. So after last week's, crash and everything, and, you know, when you seen Toto Wolff going up, talking to the stewards, and then Horn following straight after, so now they've said, so, that teams cannot go and see the stewards, the race stewards, unless they're invited to. So they will face penalties if they do go in there, uninvited. So the race stewards have to invite them in to talk. And if you go in there, you're either going to get a fine or the team's going to get points deducted. Or a disqualification from the race. Sort of taking it pretty serious.
Is this the Drive to Survive effect now, where these guys think that they're part of the big story the way the drivers are? Because they're getting all this kind of airtime in Netflix. Is that contributing to that a wee bit? Because I know Christian Horner quite likes being on camera.
He loves
that for Netflix. He quite enjoys it.
He loves to stir the pot. That's the thing.
Trying to draw that back a wee bit, where it's like, right, fucking great. He's on telly, Netflix, but Gio's beast.
Well, I think it's because obviously when Wolf went up there, Horn went in because he was saying that, well, Wolf could be in the steward's ear trying to sway their decision on what it is. You know what I mean? And then he went in. So, I mean, and I guess that's what the FIA said too, like, can't go in there because of the various different reasons or what, you know. Anyway. But, so with the crash of Verstappen, right? Red Bull is saying it could cost them up to £1.3 million.
Jesus.
That one crash. That's 1% of their budget. Well, just over 1% of their budget for this year. But remember that all that it's being capped, right? So it's 145 million, right? And like Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari, like these big teams, right? They're already struggling to meet that cap. Their spend, their net spend is usually somewhere in the region between 350 million to 400 million for a season. And now they've been capped 145. So they're kind of, they're struggling already. So that there is for them. After the crash as well, Red Bull sent, the mechanics and stuff had a look at it, at the engine and everything to see what damage, the power unit has been sent back to Japan to Sakura, which is their base. That's Honda's base, and it's being sent there to see what damage has been done to it, if they can repair it or if it's just done. If the engine's done, they need a new one, and it'd probably end up in Verstappen getting a grid penalty. Because it will push them over like the limit of the changes that you're allowed to make in a season, and the engine and stuff like that, which is a bit unfair. You know what I mean? It's not his fault.
There's been allowance when it comes to a crash.
It's like once in a season type of crash, isn't it? It seems very harsh.
Yeah,
for that.
So, like to me, like a crash like that. I mean, there should be some flexibility right there. You know what I mean?
You would think it's so not like, for common sense.
It's not just like he's been ragdolling it and fucked it up. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
he's not spanked it off the barrier to try it because he thought, oh, you know what, I need a new engine, so I'll smash it into a barrier at 150 mile an hour.
If there's an engineering fault, then that falls under the rules.
If there's a racing incident
that damages something, surely he's better allowed to replace it, you would think, man.
Yeah.
Seems a dumb rule, that one, a wee bit.
Mm-hmm. Seems harsh.
It is. I think the rule needs a little bit of a tweak, but
I totally agree with it, I think.
Yeah, madness. But then, do you know that it was Ralf Schumacher, the other day was talking about the fact that I can't quote him word for word. I can't quote him. But he said something along the lines of that Hamilton re-signing for Mercedes just showed that they couldn't get the man that they wanted. So he said that Mercedes really wanted Verstappen, and that was their number one choice, but they couldn't get him, so they settled for Lewis Hamilton. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know. Like,
I don't very unlikely, that. I think. I don't know if I agree with that either. Verstappen's the kind of franchise player for Red Bull.
I don't know if I'd be interested in him, but.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that.
I suppose that's true.
Like, anybody would be interested in Verstappen, but I think that Hamilton's their man. He's been their man for the past how many years it is. So, I think they'll do him, like, they'll make him go out on his own terms rather than push him outdoor.
Yeah.
I don't see that. I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe he knows something we don't know. Who knows? But I don't buy it though. And then Toto Wolff, he's been, Yeah, he's been giving some weird messages, some cryptic messages, man. Like, obviously about the whole Bottas situation, you know. this has people wondering, like, will he, won't he, kind of thing. But I mean, to me, I honestly think that Bottas stays at Mercedes. And the only reason why I'm saying that is because of the relationship that he has with Lewis Hamilton, both on the track and off the track. And as I said, like, Lewis Hamilton, again, has just been talking up this guy, like, he's the best teammate, this and that, and yada, yada, yada. And it just showed you, like, the other day when he, like, what a team player he is, because he came up alongside Hamilton to check, see if he had any damage, and relaying it back to the team. Like, not many drivers would do that. Like, I think he's the perfect teammate, and that's what Lewis Hamilton thinks as well, or knows. So I think he stays. I don't think that they move on from him, because I don't think it won't make Hamilton happy if he gets let go. I think right now they're trying to keep him as happy as possible, because they know what he is, you know what I mean? And that he could win them.
He's the best chance.
I think the relationship's too far gone between Bottas and
Mercedes itself.
Mercedes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He's been linked to, I would say it was Alpine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You can see that.
So
Alpine. But
what happens there, I don't know. I think the relationship's gone.
But yeah,
don't see
Alpine. The only thing with that is, Michael, sorry, is Alpine. The who's there? I can't remember the guy's name. Oh my god. He came out and basically he said that Alonso's going to be there next year,
mm-hmm.
pretty much. So, he's basically said that they're going to enact the clause that they have in his contract, so he's there for another year.
Yep.
And then obviously Ocon is there for till 2024. So who knows? I was going to talk a little bit about Olympics, but kind of running a little. Run out of time. One thing I will say about the Olympics, I'm glad it's back on. I love watching the Olympics. You know, it's amazing to see. But the one thing I wanted to say about what happened, and I can't remember the names, so forgive me, but it's in the cycling, right? The female cycling. So this lady thought that she had won the race, but she was actually in second. She was actually in second place. So, but the thing is, she was out in front of everybody, right? So she was looking behind her, looking around. Yes. So he passed the finish line. I've won. Yes. Boom. No. What happened was, there was another lady who broke away from the pack.
Ages ago.
Yeah. She was so far in front that they didn't even know that she had already finished the race.
How did the one that was in second no see the one that was in first pulling away? Did she start at the back of the pack? So she didn't realise.
No, because this lady, I think she pulled away like with about 45 kilometres left of the race to go. Right? So she must have been further back in the pack and didn't see her.
She didn't see her pulling away. Then she was so far away, she was on her eyesight.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the thing is, with cycling, you want to stay in the park because you use less energy and stuff mm-hmm. like that when you're in a park, right? For the aero. So near the end is when so she was all there like, awesome. And then they were like, oh, no, you actually got a silver medal. You haven't got a gold. Sorry. But yeah, it was a shame, but it was funny at the same time.
Jesus, man, the joys, man. Yeah, it's good to see you all back. It's a shame there's no crowds at it, though, isn't it?
Ah, I know.
It's a real shame.
The whole thing has been a bit of a shit show so far, isn't it? But no, for the athletes or anything, but just like the protests and all the nonsense that's been going on, you know, like Japan pushing to have it and everything, and then right before it, they declare a state of emergency again, and there's no fans allowed and this and that.
All these empty venues.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I think the first or second day in, and there's a weather warning for typhoons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they're supposed to be having surfing.
It's amazing.
Surfing?
Yeah, well, I mean...
They're going to catch some really big waves, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
50 feet up. By the way, I hope that doesn't fucking happen. I'll feel like the world's worst person.
I mean,
if that literally happens. No, okay, man, laughs at typhoon sufferers.
There's what I can't remember the record for the biggest wave ever surfed, you know, but it's a big wave.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, oh, sorry, and one last thing I'm going to say about the Olympics, and I was going to say it in your section, Michael, but, you know, we went through, is about, you know, you were saying about the Muay Thai and stuff potentially being brought in.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. I love Muay Thai, mm-hmm. but if they're going to make it into that the way that you're explaining it, then I don't think I want to see it in the Olympics.
Since you brought it up, right, I wasn't going to mention it just to keep slowly figuring into the weeds, but since you brought it up, the IMAF, I mentioned AIM a couple of weeks ago, I think the International MMA Federation, as part of what they're doing as far as trying to regulate the sport across Europe and then obviously the world, they're making an effort to have a governing body for amateur MMA. That means that
mm-hmm.
MMA's fought with the same rule set around the world. And as part of that, they are pushing an Olympic bid. And this has been going on for 5+ years. But, I mean, amateur MMA, you're already watering down the rule set. And it's so very much along the lines of the Muay Thai. To get it approved for the Olympics, there's so much what goes into the sport that you can't show, you can't do. Like, your elbow, like, I cannot imagine that the Olympic Committee would sanction fights with bare elbows and knee strikes.
Elbows.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe, I mean, there is version. So in Muay Thai, without getting too into it, in Muay Thai, there's a class system. Mm-hmm. So if you have, like, you might have, like, a C-class fight, and then that means that there's this particular rule set. So there is, a rule set within Muay Thai that means that elbow strikes are allowed, but you wear elbow pads,
mm-hmm.
which is a kind of weird one. So you might see something like that, but aye, as you say, it's like two steps forward, one step back. Like, it's a good thing for martial arts and combat sports to get more combat sports involved in the Olympics. But how much do we want and need to see these sports watered down to fit in with the ethos of the Olympics? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're taking away the essence of the sport just to get it into the...
Yep.
Yeah. On that note, we'll head over to Paul with some wrestling.
Here comes Paul with the wrestling! Wrestling!
Okay, lads. So, I'm going to take you to a place here inside my wrestling fandom mind over the past week. This has been a wild week as a wrestling fan, and I can't cope anymore, boys. There's too much going on. Wrestling's niche and it's boring and it's easy to predict, and everything's happening now. I can't deal with it. So, Sunday night, we finished recording, lads. Money in the Bank is on. Money in the Bank finishes with Roman Reigns standing tall over Edge. He's won again. Ref bumping shenanigans, kind of the typical heel finish. And what hits? Mm-hmm. The old trumpet's hat. The and it comes fucking John Cena.
Cena's back.
John fucking whoop-a-doo. He comes. On $1 million. And the crowd go wild for John Cena. And when you think about 10 years ago, when a friend we're just going to go into just shortly, come out and Cena was booed like he was Hitler. What a turnaround for Big Match, John. What a turnaround. Mm-hmm. Fast forward a day, lads. Monday Night Raw. Bobby Lashley has just beaten the returning Keith Lee, which the crowd again went mental for. Keith Lee, a big popular NXT wrestler. Less said about how he's getting treated in the main roster, the better. But he gets beat, and out comes fucking Goldberg, and the crowd go wild again because here's another massive star, Goldberg. So, more news. Roy's finishing with Charlotte Flair and fucking Rhea Ripley. Her name nearly escaped me there. Rhea Ripley, Charlotte beats her. Cash in time for Money in the Bank winner, Nikki Ash, the Scottish female wrestler. We now have another Scottish champion in WWE. That crap superhero gimmick has paid off. What a world we are in. So we're just at Monday now, boys. It's Wednesday, and this is where I start to lose my sanity with all this amazing news. Wednesday, it's leaked the AEW are talking to CM Punk. How excited are you for me? Tell me stuff about it, boys. How do you feel?
That's fucking amazing. That's what that is for AEW, at least.
For wrestling as a whole?
For wrestling as a whole. I mean, we'll get into that another day. But he, he has a massive following, right? Michael and Paul, you know a little bit more about how he got the cult following, right? Because back then, at that the time when he came in, I wasn't really paying attention to wrestling.
No, nah, so that's been 10 years ago. It was at his peak.
I'm not gonna go around that, like, you know. So you guys will know better, but I do know is that he has a cult following.
He does.
How he got it, not sure, but that's great for AEW and wrestling as a whole. But AEW, because a lot of those fans will automatically go
flock
and
to it,
watch him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now here we are at Dynamite started, lads, and Jericho's just beat Sean Spears. I know. I'm just taking you through this week. It's crazy. So the chairman has just been beaten by Jericho, and MJF comes out for the commentary desk where he's been absolutely burying Jericho during the match, because of course he's the heel and he does that. And he announces that for the next match, if Jericho wants to face MJF, he's got to win 5 matches. He's won match one. He's beat Sean Spears. Second match, who is he fighting? Nick fucking Gage, which again, won't mean much to you, Harvey, but this man is a fucking wild animal, a wrestler. This is a serious, kidding, guys. And anybody listening, there's a Dark Side of the Ring episode about this man. He is the deathmatch king.
Right. He's a serious threat to this 5 wins that he has to get, right?
Well, this is how it's kind of like, oh my god, it's the king of the deathmatch. How will Jericho survive? I'm assuming he does, because they wouldn't be having him do the 5 matches to get the MJF storyline.
Paul, quick synopsis, what a deathmatch is for the uneducated.
So a deathmatch, ladies and gentlemen, is a hardcore match, but with the hardcore side of it turned up to 11. There is usually violence involving very nasty sort of furniture, cinder blocks, barbed wire for ropes. Nick Gage in particular, very fond of using the long filament light bulbs that shatter. Yeah. And obviously shatter into a lot of sharp, jaggy wee pieces.
Fluorescent tubes.
That'd be the right way of saying it. Nick Gage, very much a connoisseur of these. A particular spot, if you want to look on YouTube, is when Nick Gage throws it into the air for an opponent to catch, and as the opponent catches it, Nick Gage punches through the light into the guy's face. The thing explodes. It looks great. Probably sucks to take that sort of move.
I'm curious to know if they get gimmicked ones, because real ones of them, you don't want to be breathing in the shit.
Absolutely not. But I mean, my guess, has Nick Gage ever used a gimmicked weapon in his life? Fuck no. This man literally robbed a bank. I'm not even kidding. Anyway, back to the old Dynamite. Halfway through Dynamite, and it gets released online, the AEW have fucking signed Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan.
Yes.
Are they allowed to do that? I don't know. Probably. You can't copyright.
Probably no.
Can you copyright a word?
Well, not so much the word, but
the branding, maybe.
Chant. the chant and the, but then, the motion.
But then, I don't know how it works for that. But for Christ's sake, what a week for AEW, even at Wednesday. We get to the main event and Jon Moxley versus Lance Archer, the only match I'm going to talk about this week, by the way, because it's everything else is outside the ring. Lance Archer beats Jon Moxley in the main event to become the new IWGP US title. This is an NJ, a New Japan Pro Wrestling World title, changing hands on an American show. Obviously, we're talking about the wrestling world all working together now. This is a big, massive deal. So it is. Lance Archer's a champ. Jon Moxley, I think, now, to be fair to him, gets his kind of chance to sit out and enjoy his wee girl and all that. I showed you a wee video of it through the week, guys. Anybody listening, check it on YouTube. Violence, violence, violence. And lots of it. Lots of fun. Last thing I want to really get into here in the old bit of news, lads. And this is a bit sad, really. How familiar are you with the current NXT champion, guys, Karrion Kross?
I've seen him. I've seen a match or two. He has. I've seen clips of him. I've seen some promos and stuff like that, and I've heard good things about him. But I've also heard that WWE maybe doing WWE things with him.
Oh, mate, just you wait. So, Karrion Kross, he is undefeated on NXT for over a year now, as their champion now. He was out there for a few months with an injury. He came back straight in, won the championship again. He is a huge, huge deal as far as how they present him with this beautiful big entrance with his wife as his kind of manager, lip-syncing the singing in his entrance. He's like this big sort of unbeatable monster. 2 minutes on Raw, mate. 2 minutes into the match with Jeff Hardy, and he's pinned.
Jeff Hardy of Off You Go, man.
I know, and you know what? Jeff Hardy was a WWE champion 20 years ago. Whatever it was, ridiculous. A long time ago. Jeff Hardy's now in touch with talent. He's effectively a fan favourite jobber. And they have, it is like...
The gatekeeper.
He's like a gatekeeper guy. Like, you want to look good, you'll go against an experienced wrestler, Jeff Hardy. But 2 minutes in, roll up by Jeff Hardy. Oh, aye, the crowd react great and all that. But effectively, what they have done there is said, see this third brand that were saying, oh, we're next, we're the next guys. They've effectively just said, well, yous are all shit. That's what they've done. They've absolutely killed the brand on their own.
They could have had that exact match and it would have been ever great for everybody concerned with the exact same finish if they had had Kross drop the title, take 2 or 3 months out, and then come in with a slightly adjusted gimmick and just sort of come in and give him a slow build. But when they bring him in as the head of that show,
he's the figurehead champion,
and then they just have him do a what do you call it?
Do the job, effectively. They've jobbed him.
What's the term?
Jobbed.
Jobbed him out, but
that's the only term I can think of. Really, that would have been what they should have done, was have Karrion Kross squashed Jeff Hardy, because Jeff Hardy's no one in months. Getting beat off a Jinder Mahal in fucking main event, which is like dark matches effectively for the WWE Network, the AEW Dark works on YouTube. It is brutal. I honestly feel quite bad for all the wrestlers in NXT. It's unreal. It really is unreal. It's so harsh. NXT was pushed up as the competitor against AEW for about a year and a bit there. It never stood up in the ratings. And now it's like, well, you were shit, so you know what? We'll just bury you. It's mad. It's their own brand. What? Oh, anyway. So really, that's it in wrestling news this week. It is a quick summary for me, but my God, is it a bloody busy summary. So we'll move now into this big mashup and discuss even more of this mad wrestling that I love.
Indeed. So, as we said, or as I said at the top of the show, mashup this week is essentially the rise of AEW going to bring or mean the demise of WWE? So, as we've alluded to over the last few episodes whenever we've been talking about wrestling, AEW is very much on the rise as a promotion. And as Paul talks about all the time, the rest of the indies are experiencing a sort of big uptake now as well. They're doing very well. Lots of companies starting to work together. Lots of cross promotion and stuff. And for the last few years, as much as WWE has been a very lucrative business and have done well financially, their viewership has steadily been going down. So the question previously was, could AEW ever catch up and compete with the WWE? But now everything going on and some key signings happened or on the cusp of happening, we're at a stage where the question has shifted and it's quite clear that AEW is now knocking on the door and they very much are becoming a contender. So the question is, is this the peak, the crest for WWE, and are they about to now very quickly go downhill? Is this potentially the end? So just before we talk about everything that's been happening recently and where we think the future of pro wrestling is going, Paul, do you want to give us a very quick synopsis of what got us here?
So lads, we're going to travel in time here. We're going to go all the way back to the, I know, days of wee bit noise. Doctor Who music. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, right. So back in time we go. Beautiful fucking segue. Back in time we go to the 26th of March 2001. Why is this day important, lads?
The old WCW. Is that them kicking the bucket then?
This is when WCW ceased operations. WWE then purchased the contracts and this intellectual property of WCW for a very knockdown price, and then so became the monopoly of the wrestling business in North America and effectively worldwide. They were now the one company, the one show, the one thing.
One might say that was the culmination of the movement started by one Vincent Kennedy McMahon back in the 80s.
This was something that he had tried to start for the 80s. He wanted not just to succeed in wrestling, he wanted domination. Yep. And he had finally seen off a competitor that had threatened to run his very company, the one he took from his dad, out of business. WWE are now the big beast. That is it. Fast forward now into 2018, and we have All In, and this is a show which was set up by members of the Elite. Obviously, we remember that as a key word here. This was a sub-faction as part of the Bullet Club, who are a stable within New Japan Pro Wrestling and, at the time, Ring of Honor. Cody Rhodes saw a tweet from Dave Meltzer, the wrestling journalist, who had stated that he didn't believe that another company or any promoter would ever put on a show of the size of a WWE crowd, 10,000 fans, so on and so forth, in America. He could not see this happening outside of WWE. Cody Rhodes publicly tweeted, "I'll take that bet. We can do that. All In happens. It's a massive success." All these other companies come together for one night and it's a huge financial success. This encourages businessman and managing director of Fulham Football Club, son of Shad Khan, owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Tony Khan, to then pursue how he would start a wrestling company of his own. He speaks to the Elite, he speaks to other prominent wrestlers who are all coming up on deals ending in other companies, and thus is formed All Elite Wrestling. And it starts in 2019. It's formed literally on the 1st of January. They have Double or Nothing as their first pay-per-view. They then have All Out in Chicago in September, which crowns their first champion, Chris Jericho. And then we're off to the races with Telly in November, October, November to a time. And that's it, we're away. This is seen as the first American company to have a go, a proper go at WWE. TNA kind of flirted with the idea sort of 10 years ago. It was an utter embarrassment because it was effectively the let's try get all the old WCW guys, and they were all too old by then. This was a proper coordinated attempt at running a big wrestling company in America outside of WWE. And well, lads, now we can see the effects of it. We have Dynamite pulling in an audience of 1.1 at best weeks, 1.2 even. It's actually going up over the past 3 weeks. They ran against NXT for a year there. NXT was kind of WWE's answer of, let's hurt the competition. We'll put up our developmental brand. We'll push it as a third brand. It failed miserably because this was a show running inside a small venue with tiny wee crowds every week from the same sort of home, whereas AEW was out touring the country, putting on shows in arenas. NXT, in the end, moved back to Tuesdays out the road so it could run unopposed. We're now at a stage now, lads, where AEW's audience and television viewers and live television viewers has beat its first boss, which was NXT. Its sights are now set on WWE Raw, which is the flagship television program of WWE and has been since the early 90s. Raw at its lowest this year, and it is continuing to get lower, and we'll get into that, lads. At its lowest viewership, hit 1.4. AEW last week there was just about nearly, I think it was 1.185, so nearly 1.2 million. There's only 200,000 of a difference there. What do we think, lads? Is this a company catching the juggernaut? Is this a flash in the pan?
This is a company on the cusp of a meteoric rise that has already changed the game. They're like, I don't want to say they're the new face of wrestling or whatever, but the evolution. WWE being helmed by Vince McMahon and being at the whim of Vince McMahon, who's just been living in a fantasy world for God knows how many years, 30 years or whatever. He's resisted change at almost every turn. But there's many a story been told, whether it's podcasts or documentaries or whatever, there's many a story been told about Vince McMahon where he doesn't acknowledge something until somebody can put all the facts in front of him on the table and talk him through. He needs to like absorb everything about a subject to even give it a second day's time, if that makes sense. So it took him years to realise that social media and platforms like Twitch and YouTube and everything else were worth any sort of marketing budget or anything like that. You know what I mean? That's like the perfect kind of example. Example? What's that? That's not a word. Example.
Example. It's his ankle. It's your ankle. Example.
It's like the perfect example. So, like AEW, all wrestling, they're putting out a product and a service that the younger fans, I mean, no, don't say it's only for the younger fans, but the younger fans and the indie fans, this is the TV product they want. What the WWE puts out is what Vince thinks is a good wrestling product. And it's no much different for the same thing they were putting out in the 90s. You know what I mean? All they've really done is made it PG. It's just the same thing, like rinse and repeat for them. They don't evolve, and I don't think they will while Vince is in control. And I think that very much opens the door for AEW, and they have shown that they are evolving and that they are putting on the matches and storylines that the fans want.
They are giving people what they want consistently. They get it right a lot more than they get it wrong, mate. What do you think, Harvey Feller? What were you going to say?
I think Michael just hit the nail on the fucking head.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so proud of you, Matt. That was immense.
I was going to say something similar, but he said it not.
He's killed you.
Perfect way. Yeah, man, he's amazing. Vince McMahon is he's just worst enemy right now.
See, the thing is as well, Harvey, is that Vince McMahon was a genius, but he's only interested in his opinion about
He was a revolutionary.
He was. 30, and it,
whatever years
it
ago.
Great telly.
40 years ago.
Aye. but it's an audience of one with WWE. Yeah. If Vince doesn't see it, nobody else gets to see it. And that's held back WWE problem. With so many things. Harvey, I think you were wanting to get into, for example, somebody who is a needle mover, in my opinion, who is potentially signing with AEW. It's not been confirmed yet, but CM Punk.
Yeah, it's not been confirmed yet. Yeah, CM Punk. And I think that, but the numbers that you were just talking about there, right? With them coming very close. What was the lowest that, Robert, 1.4 you said?
So it's kind of lowest kind of level, 1.4 million watching Raw. Yeah.
Right? And then AEW, it's highest we'll say is 1.2 million, right?
Yeah.
No, that's very close, right?
Very.
And if you factor in, if you have somebody like CM Punk signing for AEW, they will very quickly go above 1.4 million, like viewerships.
Maybe not. I would wager that they will hit. They could potentially hit 2 million plus, if it's marketed as CM Punk debuting, or potentially even better, if there's quote unquote rumors that Punk is going to debut on a particular show. Anybody who's interested, and it's a lot of buddies, is going to tune in to see if he does show up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the kind of following he has, right? So I can see that with him coming in, those numbers will just, they'll go up, right? How did he get those followers? I'm not sure.
I was going to hand that
up to yourself and Michael.
So CM Punk,
but I just know that he will bring a lot of followers with him, and that would be great for them. And for wrestling as a whole as well, because if they're doing all these crossovers and stuff, right? When they're doing all these crossovers, that means that these companies are getting these viewers as well. Right? And man, it just opens up so much more avenues, I guess.
It's not just that, mate. It's that's in everything now. This crossover thing, like you see it with the superhero thing, the shared universes with Marvel. Folk want to see this come through there, this go back there. They're tapping into what folk want, but to quickly say about CM Punk, CM Punk was huge about 10 years, kind of 10 years back into the past as a kind of main event wrestler in WWE. He cut this promo against John Cena kind of prior to Money in the Bank 2011, where he kind of he brought up the "my face doesn't fit, your face fits, and that's why you get everything. I'm not in any programs. I'm not even on the graphic of the main show because I'm the voice of the voiceless and you are Vince's favourite wrestler, just like Dwayne was, just like Hulk Hogan was and all this." And then he went on to say things like, this was the line that I loved, was that this company will go on making money despite itself. Yep. And fans immediately went, holy fuck, he is so right. And he's also said at the time, Vince McMahon, a millionaire who should be a billionaire. He's now obviously a billionaire. So, but the point is the big point that he made is that WWE, despite its lack of trying to please fans, to me, is what it is in the end of the day, which is the reason for AEW's existence. They have just made money despite itself. But CM Punk, again, sorry, I'm veering off. CM Punk's name is like a byword. And I kind of, it's like the thing WWE fans go to if they are not enjoying what they're watching. They chant CM Punk, CM Punk. And WWE hate it. Stephanie McMahon Helmsley was an on-screen character and one that wasn't popular at all in WWE for a number of years. And the minute she would go on a microphone, CM Punk, CM Punk, Triple H got it as well. If there was a boring match where people didn't like it, CM Punk would get chanted straight away. Like, even though, this is getting into like 6 and 7 years after he's even left the company, they would still chant his name as the rebellion of, we are not happy with what we're seeing. So the fact that this guy's coming back to wrestling now, he's 42, that's not too old for a wrestler. I don't know how he is as a wrestler now because he's been out it so long, but he was very, very good at it in his day. So you can't imagine it'll take long for him to get the ring rust off.
So, what I'd like to add to that is something that ties in with a sort of background and ethos AEW and the future, the potential future, well, actually the now, the present, with the indies banding together. Punk was a guy that came through the indies. He was, yes. He was a cult classic before he was the cult of personality. He was a guy that had so many amazing matches, in the likes of Ring of Honor. And, he had a big following, and the WWE brought him in. I don't know that they brought him in to push him to the top or anything. I don't know what they were thinking when they brought him in, to be honest.
Paul Heyman was a big fan of them originally. Paul Heyman was very behind them.
That makes sense.
And on the kind of relaunch DCW that they had for a few years, he was their champion. So no, he wasn't a Vince guy, Triple H. Not really a fan of him either, who's obviously the boss's son and at the time still top of the card in WWE. So he was an indie darling, which isn't a good thing to be when you're coming into the company, where all, even at that time it was all body guys, like Cena looks like a Marvel hero, so just trips. Yep.
So he came in as this guy that came up through the indies that had already had a fucking cult following, because I mean, guys that are really into the indies are essentially a cult to themselves, in sort of certain circles. So a bunch of them followed him into the WWE as Punk fans, not as WWE fans.
Yeah. Non-WWE fans.
And, he's a guy that's so unathletic, but just developed a style that he just made it work so well. And he was, for a time, if not the best wrestler in the world, he was up there, no question. And,
He was saying he was the best in the world, and he backed it up as the best in the world, certainly as a talker anyway. He was unrivaled.
Amazing in the mic, as evident by the pipe bomb that Paul was talking about.
Yeah.
I'd encourage anybody that's even remotely interested in what we're talking about to go into YouTube and search the pipe bomb and watch that segment, watch CM Punk sit at the top of the ramp and just speak, and watch as the WWE scrambles to cut off his mic and to try and stop him, and then realise there's no turning back because he's just said what he said on live television. And so he, as you say, he's the indie darling. He just keeps doing his thing. It almost like kind of snuck under the radar, like the WWE and Vince didn't realise what they were doing, be letting him get to the top and become the champion. And then ultimately, after the pipe bomb and everything that came after, leaves the company, and the WWE,
another year down the road,
the WWE tried, well, they sued the shit out of him. For the
podcast with Ebico Cabana, he spoke about injury things, and it was the doctor who sued them, but effectively it's kind of widely believed that it was backed by the McMahon family to try financially run him into the ground.
Punk essentially continued. I mean, the greatest thing about the pipe bomb was that Punk was being himself. He was no longer a character. He was CM Punk. He was himself. Phil. What's his name? Phil Brooks. It was so honest, and he continued that right to the end, to the WWE run, and then into that podcast. Colt Cabana, Art of Wrestling?
Art of Wrestling, 226, right. I believe.
So again, Colt Cabana, look that up. Just absolute, like,
eye-opening.
That's the word. Eye-opening conversation that they had. And the details that Punk discussed about the mistreatment and the mismanagement through the WWE, and lawsuits abound, widely believed to be backed by the WWE, and that just the cult following that was building, that whole scenario just put a rocket under it and shot it to the moon.
There is an argument that CM Punk effectively in the long term started the anti-WWE.
Yes, that's what I was trying to get at.
To the rival. And I think that's what you're trying to say, is that that this kind of sentiment started then as a rumble, it then grew and grew and grew, and this is now... And by the way, the positive changes that Punk leaving WWE, if you didn't have CM Punk, WWE didn't have... They wouldn't have had Daniel Bryan, who followed on next year again, was another Ring of Honor kind of indie darling wrestler who worked a completely different style for these big bodybuilder shaped guys. A very exciting wrestler. And obviously, that was one that the fans wanted as a champion. And WWE fought that. Mm-hmm. But unlike Punk, they learned that the embracing Daniel Bryan and his fandom was a good thing. And obviously, Daniel Bryan goes down now as a WWE legend. However, again, amazing that Daniel Bryan is switching ships. And the reason of this, guys, and I'm going to go into how does WWE change here, this is because WWE refused to work with other companies. Daniel Bryan wants to try work in Japan again with NJPW. AEW are prepared to do these kind of things. WWE, it's just, we are the universe. We are the WWE universe. Mm-hmm. Nothing else exists. So, of course, Bryan Danielson, as he's known out with WWE, will, by the looks of it, choose AEW and New Japan. But there's a question. How did WWE fix this slide? What did they do? There's a good question, Beast, because I don't know.
Vince McMahon needs to, like, start taking advice from other people.
Yes.
It can't just be about him. Well, I mean, to be honest, I'm telling you, Vince McMahon needs to step down. That's the first step of WWE fixing things. Because as long as he's there, nothing's going to change. It might change a little bit, but he's going to change it. Well, he's going to, because it's all about him and it's all about what he wants. You know what I mean? Michael, who were you saying? There was somebody that was doing a great job. I want to say on SmackDown or something. And
Paul
then.
Heyman.
Paul Heyman. Yeah, yeah, Paul
Heyman. Paul Heyman, the man.
Yeah, he was
in charge of booking SmackDown, mate, yeah.
And then all of a sudden he was gone because he was doing so well and basically. People were talking about him.
He was doing a good job and he fought for what he believed in, which meant he argued with Vince McMahon. And Vince McMahon doesn't want arguments, he wants subservience fees writing team. He doesn't want to tell you how to do his job. He wants you to do what he thinks is right sort of thing.
Yeah, Paul Heyman had proved that he was good at what he was doing and then he was like, oh, I want this and I want that, and it's Matt. So he's his own, his worst enemy, his own self.
Yeah, and by the way, it should be noted, it's weird with Mr. McMahon. He tries, I think, to move with the times and to accept kind of different opinions. He just very often goes, no, but fuck it, I know what I'm doing. Because he put Paul Heyman in charge of Raw in 2019, and Paul Heyman started pushing, and you don't know these names through AEW telling you, he started to push Aleister Black, AEW, Andrade, AEW, Big Drew, Drew became champion eventually, but now he's talking about Loch Ness Monsters and fucking swords, and back to the Vince McMahon version of Scotsman, which is, we're proud warriors in Loch Ness, and all that shite that Scottish folk fucking hate, by the way. We're no fucking jukers. It really annoys me that. It's good that, listen, it's great that Nicky Ash, almost a superhero, is a WWE champion, but our Scottish representation is that lassie Viper isn't it funny how the fat lassie hangs about with the gorgeous lassie? That's her basic involvement. Nicky, almost a superhero, is the fucking naffest thing in the world. No normal person's going to find that cool. And Drewie is, I am Scottish, I wear a kilt. So, anyway, sidestepping, lads. But he does try to accept the kind of the help, but always eventually just goes back to the audience doesn't like this and I'm the audience.
You just made me think of something there. Paul Heyman did an interview a few years ago, or it was on a podcast or something. Yeah. I think it was an interview. In fact, actually, tell you, it was like a one-man show, kind of a night with thing.
He did Inside the Rope, I think it is, the kind of show in the UK.
Right. So he was asked a question about Vince McMahon, and he said that Vince McMahon is such a control freak that he can't take it when he sneezes. He gets angry with himself when he sneezes because he's no in control with it. That is the level of control freak he is.
I've got a better one. I've got an even better one. He remains clean shaven and hates facial hair growing because he can't let the beard win. I'm not even joking. That's a real story.
The man's a psycho. It's made him a billionaire.
He's an unusual man.
It's made him a billionaire, which is tremendous.
Oh, you can't knock it though. Tremendous. You can't knock the drive for the guy.
Assuming he lets the money flow down. But it's no good for a business that's trying to evolve over the years. So,
aye.
What can WWE do different? I mean, wait until Vince retires?
That's the sad truth. It is. It'll eventually come to when Mr. McMahon steps down. It's going to be a mad power struggle for who takes over next. But it could be good for them.
But who's? I mean, all right.
Who runs creative? So much of
he's so much of a control freak, right?
Yeah.
He wants to control everything, right? This is what you're saying to me. He will never stand down.
No, he won't. I think that's
So when we're saying that wait till he stands down, he will never stand down. So unless he puts somebody in charge that he wants and he knows it's going to do.
This is purely my opinion, speaking out my arse. Let me preface it to that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I firmly believe that Vince McMahon will do everything he can to put in place, I don't even know what it would be called, I guess, a sort of action plan, like a legally binding action plan, so that when he leaves, whether it's through him being deemed medically unfit to run the company, or whether it's through him dying or whatever, for a certain period of time, there will be sort of plans in place that legally speaking, the WWE can't divert from. I think that will happen to a degree.
I mean, it sounds ridiculous,
stipulate who's to succeed him in the role of CEO or whatever. And then, you know what I mean? Like, they'll be, So I think however many years until he goes and then however many years until his influence goes, which is a big, massive opening for AEW.
You know, if you were just somebody and you didn't know who Vince McMahon was and you heard what you just heard, right, Michael, you would think, that's fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Who would do that? How can they do that? But if you even have the slightest idea of who Vince McMahon is, it actually makes fucking sense.
Yep.
Like,
it totally makes sense.
It's like, fuck.
He's basically missed it all.
You could see it
happening. A guy who's nearly 80 that is being in charge of this company that he took for his dad in the 80s, early 80s?
Yeah, kind of late 70s, early 80s, mate. I mean, I don't know exactly.
And then
but
just steamrolled every wrestling promotion that dared step in his way through to the culmination, as you mentioned, where he picked up WCW for scraps. He just completely and utterly had his way, and then he got to the point peaking, I would say, at the Attitude Era. And then from there, they just drifted on the laurels because there was no competition. And they tried to evolve and be PG, and they tried to do this, and then they brought out the network, which was this great evolution because nobody gets cable TV in America anywhere. It's all subscription-based, it's all internet streaming, yada yada. And it's just all too little too late. They just haven't taken the steps to evolve with the fan base.
The thing is, though, is that they still have all these things there that, as the main company in wrestling, mean they have a huge, huge advantage over anybody. They have the prestige. I mean, you say WrestleMania, that is wrestling to people. And that is a guaranteed massive bloody stadium in America full of people, even if they've not watched wrestling all year. That is a piece of America that is America. Like, to the outside world, WrestleMania, that is such a big thing. Like, they have all these things there that mean they are a massive company. Their media deals, so on and so forth. They're making money hand over fist. It's just a shame that what they're making is really... It just... AEW should have brought out the best in them, and it should have made them try to be better. And that's the thing I want to go into now, is the AEW kind of model that Tony Khan's kind of went away for the last kind of 2 years, and it's this kind of slow progression of they're not doing what other companies in the past have tried to do well, have tried to kind of hot shot all these names in. Like TNA did it with Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, like all these WCW guys who were past it physically. And Ric Flair was in his 50s going to TNA, way past it and no fit enough for it anymore. AEW have been clever enough, they know, and they've seen it, by the way, from WWF back in the 90s where they built their own stars. WWF against WCW, all the big guys left to go to WCW for all this money. The WWF were forced to then create The Rock, create Stone Cold, create Triple H. Kane, like Kane was the kind of, obviously he didn't come in into the mid-90s kind of as the Undertaker's kind of rival. They made the stars and they trusted these guys to lift this company and carry them. Look at Stone Cold. You say Stone Cold, everybody knows what Stone Cold is. The Rock's one of the biggest stars in the world now. And that came for the beginnings of a Vince McMahon who was on form, trusting and actually working way stars. No micromanaging them and making sure that WWE came first. It was about building the stars. Yeah. The stars then built the company and it was a reciprocal kind of relationship. And you get that new AEW with the likes of Darby Allin, huge. He's going to be in the next Jackass movie, so he is. Jackass 4, Darby Allin's going to be in it. Jungle Boy Jack Perry, outside kind of name there, obviously, with his dad being a very famous actor. He was in bloody Family Feud, so he was, at the weekend there. Cody Rhodes has been on TNT with the Go Big Show. Like they're letting these guys go out there, trusting that they're going to help build the company, and the company builds them by putting them on top, so on and so forth. They're playing the slow game. It doesn't matter that they're behind the WWE now. They're going to be behind the WWE because they're the startup company.
Yeah, because they started us,
But they're no worried about catching them in time. They don't need to catch them now. They're quite happy to be there and exist with the WWE.
But you know that's the thing. They don't need to overtake them. This is not
They don't.
This is not like we're playing football or anything. Like, you know, we need to finish top of the league. No, this is them taking the time, making sure that they put out a good product, and making sure that the fans get what they want and get what they pay for.
They're trusting their own process, Harvey. I mean, they're no worrying and reacting.
They don't have to worry about what's going on here, what's going on over there. They're just doing what they need to do. The only thing that they worry about is their fans.
Yeah. And back in the 90s.
The fans and their wrestlers.
Yeah.
To me, they take care of the wrestlers.
They seem to.
Yeah.
And they're worrying about themselves first and making sure that they do right by themselves and no. And back in the 90s, WWE had a very nasty sort of war with WCW where it was about trying to hotshot one another to get the quick boosting ratings. Like, there was a lot of, like, WCW were mad for mad title changes all the time just to try jump the ratings. And WWE kind of, WWF obviously at the time, kind of replied with that. And that's what kind of WWE did with NXT there, which was a very popular sort of niche thing in WWE with all these kind of up-and-comers and wrestlers who came for the indies, and folk enjoyed it. And then it became this kind of miniature version of Raw where it was just hotshot booking to try disrupt the competitor, whereas the competitor was just doing the same thing. It wasn't he trying to... It just let its quality come through in the end, and that's what happened. Boss 1 to AEW has been beaten, and now they now chase the next boss, and then the big boss would be SmackDown, which draws the biggest audience share on Fox. Could they do it one day, lads? I think they maybe could, but the main thing for me is that they both still exist.
They still exist. It is, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm in the opinion of that AEW just keeps doing what they've been doing and then continually getting bigger, getting better, and then with some key additions, like, you know, it'd be great to see. And with some of these bigger names coming from the WWE over to AEW, can only be a good thing as long as they're marketed properly and they get the run that they're supposed to get and they don't get what happens to them.
I know what you mean.
Shouldn't be what happens to them in the WWE, which I don't think it will, but, you know, they come here and then get what they deserve is basically mm-hmm. what I want to see.
It's going to be like, a very busy roster now with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. Like, that's two top mm-hmm. of the card guys, and a very busy top of the card with Kenny Omega and the Hangman and all that. The good mm-hmm. thing for AEW potentially is, and I'm not saying it's a good thing, because obviously Kenny Omega has been working very, very much kind of held back with kind of niggling injuries. It gives him the time that he can now, if he wants to, Kenny Omega, he can rest, get ready mm-hmm. again, and come back. Same way, John Moxley, just his wife Renee is just their wee baby. Cody mm-hmm. Rhodes has just became a dad as well, so there's no as much pressure for these guys at the very top of the card to keep going and sucking a fan base of them, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Same with Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho's now 50, and he's also got his rock band that he's actually coming to Glasgow, and me and my mate are going to go see them in Glasgow, so that's going to be great.
Right.
But it means that there is other guys there that are just as good or better, that are ready at the top of the card. Their own guys that they've built, Darby Allin, Jungle Boy, bloody Lance Archer, obviously, as well, and all these kind of guys that have came for WWE as well. Like, it means they can continue keeping going with this high-quality product, which, again, it's been good sometimes. It's been really good sometimes. Some things they miss on, but they're trying. They're trying, lads, is the biggest thing.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. They're not going to get everything right. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't be perfect. But they seem, they sure are doing the good right now. In fact, I would say they're doing amazing things right now.
I agree. But,
as long as they continue to build this is one of the other things they need to do. They need to continue to build their own products as well. You know, like bringing them up. Like even guys, you know, coming through the indies and stuff, and they take them and they build them into a. They need to continue doing that. Keep things fresh, keep things exciting.
I would say.
Yeah, they can't.
I would say there's a couple of things they're doing very well that will allow them to continue to grow and to continue to have a strong market share. One, and it is the most important thing for a wrestling promotion, they're keeping the fans happy and they're giving the fans what they want.
Yep, 100%.
Whether you're an indie fan and you've been a long-time supporter like Ring of Honor or somewhere, or whatever your sort of promotion has been for the last however many years, you're getting a chance to see the wrestlers that you love and support take their character that they've built for years and take it to a big show
mm-hmm.
and have a chance to shine. Whereas if they went into WWE, they would be flung into the WWE's washing machine, go through their instant repeat cycle and pop out as a bad superhero.
Everyone knows how they're coming out. Everyone knows where they're landing the box.
The hard work, the blood, sweat and tears that these guys put in to build their characters, build their fan base, they actually get to take it with them into the promotion, and that rolls into my mm-hmm. second point. They're keeping the wrestlers happy and they're giving them a chance to be involved with their own character development, to be a driving force in their own careers, and they're giving them a platform to bring whatever fan base they've got with them and mm-hmm. sort of get involved on TV, on these bigger matches, and getting in to some degree on the ground floor of a company that by all accounts looks as if it's going to be around for a long, long time. I'd say we're very much in the evolution of the Monday Night Wars. We're coming towards that where we're going to have two mm-hmm. really strong wrestling promotions, certainly for Western world, for America. These two sort of, WWE is the juggernaut, but AEW is going to get stronger and stronger. They're going to have two shows on TV soon.
Yeah, that's right. Rampage is coming.
And they're obviously building out their roster to the point where, you know, not too long ago, you might question whether or not they could sustain two shows over a long period of time. But I'd say there's no question now. The only questions now are around how they go about it, whether it's like a brand split situation, whether they've got wrestlers, you know, that just like one set of titles, the wrestlers just bouncing about, appearing almost mm-hmm. at random on shows. Which I think we will have to start with. But how long they stick with that, I don't know. But I think that's where we'll start with. And obviously the wrestlers get the opportunity to appear in other shows. You know, they get to go and see what it's like to compete in Japan.
there's a wider world. Yeah.
And the other thing, the final point that I would say that's sort of asterisk, kind of a wee add-on that tags on to both my points there, is AEW are building the foundations and putting the work in to promote the forgotten divisions of WWE, the tag team division and the women's division.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely in the tag team, mate. Absolutely.
So WWE, to the whims of Vince over the years, that they've just, I guess Vince at some point has just, in his typical ways, said that he doesn't like tag team wrestling anymore. It's not what it used to be. Or, I don't know. Whatever his thought was, and that they've just let the division go to pot. They've no promoted it. They've no made it a big deal. And it's came to the point in WWE where the tag teams are like
the pre-show matches, mate, basically. Tag team
and
title matches.
They focus more on like their kind of sort of mini factions, and you know, rather than just being a really solid two-man tag team or two-woman tag team. Yeah. Well, that's a whole other topic of discussion.
Don't even get me started in the women's tag teams. No, there's a whole podcast. My God, Jesus, just no,
I mean, really, do they not think that it's possible that two women could have it? Anyway,
no worth it.
sorry, they're so behind the times, and that's anyway.
So to summarise, though, lads, what do we think? What do we think? AEW, are they here to stay, and is this a long-term competitor? One word answer for Harvey. What do you think, Harvey?
Yes. You want a one-word answer?
One-word answer. Yes. Michael 100%. Allen, the Viking. Yes. Paul the Wish, Julian Speroni says yes. And I think that's where we leave it, lads. We've nailed
it. Well, actually.
Or we've nailed it in
actually,
our opinion.
Just to make an absolute arse of a lovely ending. One more question.
He's killed me.
The question, the title of the episode. Is the rise that we are clearly seeing of AEW, that's an unquestioned, we're unanimous, but it's an unquestioned rise of AEW. They're going to continue to rise. Is this the demise of WWE, or do they, maybe it takes them 10 years, but do they make the necessary changes and not necessarily squash AEW, but do they continue, or at some point do they crumble under their own weight of the enormous shitstorm that they're making?
And my answer to that would be no, they don't die. They're part of America. Yep. They'll be there forever. Too big to fail, but they won't change. So I think you're talking two big wrestling companies in good, because eventually that'll allow WWE to, and the expression is iron sharpens iron. Let's hope so.
What I would say though, Paul, you just said too big to fail. I don't think they're too big to fail.
Well, WCW proved that.
Think that they very well could go under if they don't change things and AEW keeps going the way that they're going, and you have the best of the best who are coming up that they no longer want to go to WWE, they want to go and compete AEW, and WWE is getting all just, you know, the nobodies, pretty much the unwanted stuff for AEW. They could well cease to exist.
You never know, mate.
If they don't change things, will it come to that?
Switch,
Not sure that it'll come to that, but I think that gone are the days that they're the be all and end all of wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, I wish I'd went second deal and you'd finish that, because that was a good bit of finish.
Right,
that was a good bit of finish.
You're right though.
My thought on that sort of final question is that, as Paul says, they're too big, too much of a juggernaut. They're not just going to crawl under a rock. They're not going to die and fall apart. However, as much as I think they can and will change as far as leaning more into developmental again, to build up their own stars, because, you know, the up and comers are going to choose AEW over them 9 times out of 10. And as much as I think they can alter their TV product, when they sort of finally realise and get in, to the fact that they're not putting out what the fans want, I think the stumbling block for them is going to be their HR department. and the treatment of the wrestlers, because I mean, I don't know the inner workings of AEW, but with the good things that the wrestlers say about them, I've got to assume that they are treating their talent much more fairly than WWE do. And I think that is where they need to make their biggest change, and I think that's where they're going to drag their feet the most. And what comes of that, I guess we'll see.
We can only see in time, lads.
Yeah.
Happy with that? Leave it there.
Happy days.
Tremendous. Well, on that note, let us know what you think. Hit us up on social media. So many questions, open-ended questions in there. We would love to hear your thoughts. So let us know on social media. Let's just make it an ongoing discussion. Whether you're a diehard wrestling fan, yeah, or whether you used to watch it when you're 10 and now you're no into it, but you're interested to see what's happening with the new changes and everything else, get involved with the conversation. So, you have been listening to the Midweek Mash Tatty. I've been Mick, they've been Harvey and Paul. See you again next week.
Bye.